All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Orchid Pod, a podcast about orchids. I'm James Keach. I'm an extension agent with the University of Hawaii's service over on Kauai, and I also do some work with Kalapana Tropicals. Caleb, you want to?
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm Caleb Houck, and I'm the owner of Jungle Mist Orchids here on the Big Island. And we're just decided to put together this podcast to kind of get some. Have some fun talking about orchids and hopefully give people what they want here.
Yeah. To that point, we talked a little bit about what we wanted to cover, and there's just so much to talk about with orchids. And Caleb had the great idea, you know, as we were getting kind of wrapping up 2022, starting 2023, going through and looking at some of the higher awards that the American Orchid Society gave this past year. I know for folks who aren't as familiar with the judging system, each year the orchid judges go back through and look at all of the awards that have been given. And there's a few different award categories that are eligible for kind of special awards based on the type of award or based on the type of orchid. And so we normally go through that anyway, but you know, we thought it would be kind of fun to look through the FCCs, which are the first class certificate, the highest quality award you can get, and see which ones kind of stood out to us, if there was particular ones that grabbed our attention. I think both of us had a handful that kind of were interesting, but then one that kind of rose to the surface for each of us. And so we're going to chat about that a little bit today. Caleb, you want to?
Yeah, you know, being a PAF guy, you know, of course I ended up on a PAF. And, you know, it was actually kind of interesting. So this one, it's, you know, this thing got a 96 point FCC, just last December. It was shown by, Kroll Smith, out of Florida, judging the, what was that, the judging center down there, maybe a Popka, I believe, if I can recall. Basically this thing is, it's a Harold Kupowitz by Roth, Child Yanom, which Harold Kupowitz, as most of us know, is half Roth by Malpoense, and quite spectacular. And so they backcross this to Roth, and I'm guessing to, you know, get some more color, maybe increase the size, and then also add more of the flower count, the multifloral, right? Because the Roth Child Yanom is a multifloral. Malpoense only gives you one flower, but it's quite impressive too. You know, from the Parvi sepalum section, you know, it's quite very different than the multiflorals. You know, just the way the flowers are, the substance and whatnot. And so it's a great cross. And so I was looking at this thing and I was like, wow, 96 points. I mean, that's like almost perfection, right? And then I realized that the same plant, you know, Cristel is the cultivar that I didn't mention. And in 2010, it actually got an FCC as well. I mean, 13 years ago, and that, well, it must have been, it's probably a first bloom or maybe second, but it only had two flowers and two buds. So it was probably a pretty small plant. And so he must have brought it back in, you know, 13 years later. This thing had, you know, seven flowers, two buds on two spikes, you know. The size was a whopping 24.5 centimeters, you know, natural spread horizontal by 17 centimeters vertical. And for all you that don't know, size-wise, that's really large. You know, and Roth has the nice, you know, long straight petals that go out. And so the Malpo kind of adds the yellow and widens the petals, right? And makes it, you know, maybe a little bit better form. And so that was, you know, really caught my eye. You know, what did you think when you looked at that plant, James?
I mean, I love kind of those crosses between multiflorals and parvis, just because you really, it looks, I mean, you can see both parents in it, but it really gets kind of this, its own sort of appeal. There were, I think, two, there was one that was like a Brachy by multifloral that I was looking at, and then this one that was the, like you said, a Parvi by multiflora, was it Yasumasa Takahashi, I think was the mm-hmm. cross or something?
Yep.
Yeah. And like you said, it was, what blew me away as I looked at it though, was that whole going, already having an FCC and then submitting it again for more points. Like I'd seen people, I mean, I've submitted stuff for awards where it's had an HCC and we're trying to get an upgrade to a AM or high class certificate to an award of merit, like the next tier up. But I'd never seen someone who already had FCC, like the highest award of quality you can get, try to get more points for it. And like you said, 96 is really high for an FCC like that.
Yeah, you know, when I was looking at the, you know, comparing sizes and wise, because, you know, size is only 10 points, but, you know, when you're already in the FCC realm, you know, this one was improved. You know, it was about a half a centimeter bit larger. And then also, you know, vertical was 2 centimeters larger. So it did have more size, and I can see giving it more points in the size category alone. But the form too and the color was really outstanding. And, you know, just great. Great, more color on it, I think, and you know, possibly improve form too. Obviously, we only can go off of pictures, so it leaves a lot to be desired. But I imagine with all the extra floriferousness as well, with the more flowers, you know, whole another spike in fluorescence. Like this thing must have been outstanding. I would have loved to have seen it. You know,
and I looked at it in comparison to the previous one, but I can't remember offhand. It looked to me like the petals on the recent award were wider, or at least maybe flatter, I don't know, than on the previous one. Do you like it?
Yeah, so the previous one, the petal width was 3.5 on 92 when it was came in for 92 points. Okay. And then, you know, this time around, it was actually 3.3. So, you know, which is marginal, you know, I mean, 0.2 yeah. centimeters. But I think one thing that stands out to me with this higher award is the color and the striation on the petals and the dorsal sepal is just outstanding. Yeah. You know, you're never going to really get the full flatness with these parvies. They're very, I want to say, you know, I don't want to use the word dainty, but they're soft, you know, and so the petals are, it's hard to get a nice flat petal. And so you have to expect that to have some waviness. And so, you know, that comes through, you know, even though it's only 1/4 Malpo, it still is showing that. And then, of course, the bright yellow. I mean, this thing is just, you know, the black lines and then the yellow, it just pops. And so, you know, that was probably, you know, probably what I saw my favorite one, the FCC that was awarded this year. And, you know, and it's so hard to get awards. I mean, or FCCs, I should say. I mean, we barely award any at our center, you know, every year, maybe we get a few that make the grade, you know, even 90 points. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, you know, that's pretty awesome. I mean, I think so, you know, congrats to that, you know, that thing's awesome. And, you know, the intersectional breeding is pretty cool. You know, when you put stuff like that on there.
I love the intersectionals. I think they're like some of my favorites just to see these two really different types kind of combine and what comes through and what doesn't. And I think it's interesting what you said about the FCCs too, because, you know, that parent and I guess grandparent too, Rothschild Yanam, has so many high awards already that I think, you know, I've heard from folks that it's hard to get new awards with it because the standard is so high already. I mean, I did see one and I forgot to write down the name, but in general, you know, it seems like when people are going for awards with Roths, you know, they really have to have like everything tuned down to perfection. And, you know, not to say this didn't, but it was interesting seeing something that was by pedigree, what, like 3/4 Roth and then 1/4 Malpo, and very uniquely different from a Roth, but still like doing really well like that.
Yeah, you know, impressed. I mean, just like off the top of my head here, I'm looking and we got 254 awards for Rothschild Yanam, Paphiopedilum Rothschild Yanam. So yeah, it is hard to beat. You know, there actually was one this year though. They just got a 91 point FCC too, just straight Roth back in May. And you know, this one was exhibited by James Arnold in Florida. You know, quite nice. So people are still showing them. We see some occasionally, but with all the hybrids too, the multifloral hybrids that you know, we've had a chance to look at here and just across the nation, you know, there's some amazing stuff that's coming out with the more generations and the more breeding. I mean, and mind you, it takes like 5 years to even flower one out, right? So I'm sure there's stuff in cultivation right now we haven't even seen you know, maybe hasn't even been registered because there's no flower yet. And so that's exciting to, you know, what's in store for the future, hopefully, because I know there's plenty of people still breeding these. You know, I have a few going in my nursery, and they're yet to be flowered out as well. But, you know, pretty impressive when you see something like that. I mean, 13-year-old plant, well, probably more than 13, probably 20-year-old plant, right? Because if it, who knows how many years it took to get that first award. Right. And even if that was the first flowering, you know, I mean, imagine it might have been, but still quite a feat, you know. Congrats to that plant and the owner.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, I don't have tons of experience growing paths, and especially like species or multiflorals. I think I tried growing melopoints once like 15, 20 years ago. And never got it to flower, unfortunately. I've heard it can be a little bit tricky with like staying in the bud stage for a long time. What's your experience been with like growing straight Roth or straight Malpo?
Well, with my climate, you know, I'm actually a little cooler weather for Hawaii than most Hawaii growers, right? Like my winters get down into the 50s, mid 50s, high 50s, occasionally a low 50 overnight low. So they grow a little slower for me. But what I'd say is I've had a hard time growing straight Malpo. And, you know, a lot of these parvies, they do like to have kind of a drying period in the winter. And it's sometimes that's hard when you're growing a bunch of different orchids all in the same greenhouse, all in the same watering system. And to keep, you know, this one bench drier than the rest of my paths that maybe want to stay wet. Because the multiflorals, I still keep pretty good water in the winter too. And so, you know, it's a little trickier to cultivate, but like, you know, just right now I just went in the greenhouse and I have a Malpo micranthum and, you know, in bloom, amazing one. You know, super stoked on it. And that reliably flowers for me. But like, nice. I can grow Jackie Eye, which is, you know, used to be a variety of Malpo. Jackie Eye, super easy for me. Malpo, kill them all. Micranthums, kill my micranthums. But Malpo micranthum, that actually reliably flowers every single year. You know, even like my Norito Hasegawas, which are, you know, Malpo Armeniacum, those are very reliable. So I, you know, what my experience is that when you add a little bit of more genes, get the primary hybrid going, they're easier to grow than the straight species. And whether it's temperature, water, you know, because paths do like it wet, you know, on the wetter side, you know, compared to like a Cattleya or something. And so, you know, that's kind of where I, for my climate, what I'm doing. I think maybe down the hill a little bit more, I'd have better luck with Malpo maybe. But I mean, Malpo likes cooler weather. So it's probably just my culture is my take on it.
Yeah, no. And I'm, you know, like I said, I'm always impressed with anyone who can grow those. I've like pretty sure I've killed Macranthum as well as Malpo years and years ago. And like you said, it's interesting to me too with primaries that sometimes they can grow so much easier than either parent. Like I think of hybrid that Ben Oliveros, who is in our center, has brought in Cattleya Polestar, which is a hybrid between Coccinia and Bregeri. And both of those are reputation for being really tough to grow. I mean, I've know so many people who've grown Coccidia and killed it, myself included. And Bregeri too has like these kind of exacting requirements. But the hybrid between them, I'm not going to say it's easy to grow, but it's easier than either parent. It seems like it kind of gets that synergy almost. And I wonder, I mean, not having grown either the primary between Malpo and Rothschildianum or this back cross to the Roth, but I wonder how much easier it would be to grow than either of its, you know, the species and its pedigree like that.
Yeah, you know, I think the blending the genes you get both, you know, because Coccinia is more of a cooler grower on average. And I think that's why most people have a hard time with that. You know, I can grow those great. And of course, Ben does too, right? And he's a little warmer than I am, but he's still, you know, 1,700 feet or something. And so, you know, get into the 50s at night and stuff instead of staying in the mid to high 60s, which, you know, most sea level farms are at. And so, but I think adding that extra parent just gives you more room for, you know, I want to say an ability to handle more zones, you know, more temperature zones, you know, because here in Hawaii, we're blessed with, you know, you could basically grow almost any orchid in the world here due to our elevations. We have everything from, you know, obviously all the way up to 13,000 feet, but most, you know, most farms are either volcano level 4,000 feet or below. But, you know, that allows us to really push the limits on what we can grow and where. You know, I'm growing stuff I have no business growing at my farm, but at the same time, I can't grow things I want to grow. And so I'm in a quandary as well, where you're never satisfied with your one climate. But, you know, we're so blessed out here in Hawaii. You know, Mother Nature is such a dominating factor and helps us out with everything, you know. So, you know, that's my take on those. You know, you were looking at a plant, I know. What was that you were telling me about earlier you were checking out?
Yeah, so I was looking at Persthachea. Used to be Encyclia, and then this specific species, Citrina, I think they'd lumped it in with Cattleya for a while, and then they moved it back out. And now with the Persthachea split, they've kind of kept it in there. So same genus as Persthachea cochleata, the cuttlefish orchid, has those like green petals and black lip. It's pretty easy to grow. But this one was Persthachea citrina, and then the cultivar clonal name was Monster. And it got a 91-point FCC. Exhibitor was Ramon de los Santos in Sacramento. And it looks like back in April. And I was saying before we started recording, what interested me with this is, I mean, I love this species. I've never had good luck with it, but I've always thought it's really neat. I've heard the fragrance is absolutely incredible on it. But I was curious at when I started looking at it compared to others of the same species that had been awarded, it looked like the measurements were pretty similar. And so I was like, why did this one get that, you know, get an FCC compared to some of these others? And it's one of those things where I think sometimes even with the measurements, it's hard to kind of fully explain how different they look. So if looking at this one compared to the last award, and the last award for this species was back in 2012, you see really similar sorts of dimensions. I mean, it's what natural spread of 10.3 horizontal, 9 vertical, versus like the last one, which was Memoria Thaliasung, which was 11.1 horizontal, 8.5 vertical. So really close, you know, like slightly bigger horizontal, slightly smaller vertical. But the one that got the FCC Monster is just way rounder looking compared to any of the others that I was looking at for the species. Like I always think of it as kind of being star-shaped. And that's definitely what you see if you look at most of the other ones have kind of really pointy petals, pointy sepals. This one, the petals and the sepals are both kind of blunt-tipped. It's not a complete circle. Like the petals aren't as long as the sepals, so it doesn't do that. But it's definitely way more of that, you know, thing we always talk about in judging flat and round. I mean, this doesn't look particularly flat, but certainly way rounder than any of the others for that species.
Yeah, this thing's super full. I'm looking at it right now. It's, you know, the only thing about it that I can see is this has some interestingness to it is the lip compared to some of the other ones. And it could be just the view, but I'm looking at like Luan and some of the others. But yeah, it's definitely very full, and that's awesome. And I like the roundness because, yeah, the star shape stuff, everything is star shape, you know. Looks like, you know, the progression of some good breeding. When was that? California Sierra Nevada Judging Center, back in April. You know, yeah, that thing's awesome. You know, and this single flower, you know, these things don't have a lot of flowers. So, you know, you get one nice one and then you're like stoked, you know, very well done.
And I think this is another one kind of like you were talking about earlier with like Coccinea or those others where it's a little bit cooler growing. I'm pretty sure I've heard that it only does well mounted. It's always kind of pendulous. The flowers are always facing down. And, you know, if looking through these awards, you see that in a lot of them. But
yeah, you know, yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting. There's this, it looks like the same plant, got two different awards and has two different names, Yasnita Gold and Yasnita.
Mm.
Did you see that's the same picture?
Yeah, right.
But two different award numbers. One got 81. The Yasnita got 181 points. Anyways, that's a side tangent. But you know, it's always interesting to find quirky stuff in the system too. You know, I mean, it's such a big database, and there's so much going on. You know, things. There's always some random stuff that you're like, oh, okay. But yeah, that thing's fabulous. Still around. You know, I've grown a few of these, and not this variety, but this Prosthetias, and you know, they do well for me up in the cooler weather. And you know, I think the key too is, like, you know, really repotting these things. You know, a lot of times, and even at my nursery, I'll go to my hobby house and I'm like, look at something, I'm like, oh god, what's up with these yellow leaves, or why is this looking all humbug and sick? And I'm like, oh, I just haven't repotted this in 3 or 4 years, you know. And it's like, they really do want to be repotted every year, you know. It's, or not every year, but every 2 years. You know, I mean, Cattleyas, they can grow out of the pot and bulbos and stuff like that. But, you know, for Paffs and like these other things that are kind of pot bound, you know, every single time I've noticed when I have a problem with an orchid, it needs repotted. But with that said, even if you have a bunch of rotten roots, and I'm like, oh god, this thing's dead. And I'm like, no, it's not. Just rip off the rotten roots. And this is, you know, one of those, you know, grower tricks. Get rid of all the rotten roots and find a pot that whatever roots you have left, whatever, you know, whatever you got there after you rip off all the dead stuff, gently, of course, careful not to, if there is any good roots, you don't want to lose those, but, you know, clean off all the, any grossness, maybe do a little soak in some, you know, well, maybe a hydrogen peroxide soak or something, you know, with water to kind of just help heal it up a little bit, and then find a pot that is the correct size that'll fit it like a hat or something, you know. Because one thing too I notice is, and I had to learn this the hard way back in the day, was I'd overpot these things. You know, I'm like, oh, I have this, I'm going from a 2-inch, I'm gonna throw it into a 5-inch pot. It's like, bad idea. You know, it's nice to skip a pot size, right? But it's like, you really gotta make crowd those orchids out. You know, I've yet to meet an orchid that doesn't want to be crowded. And, you know, it's kind of contradictory to how you grow other plants. You know, usually you up-pot a, you know, flower, a soil plant, and you put a bunch of dirt around it. And it's like, that's just what people think you need to do. But, you know, really with the orchids is you really have to be mindful of the pot size. Even if you, I had a plant that, one of my awarded plants, it was a path that almost died. And same thing, ripped off all the bad roots. I stuck that thing into a little 2-inch pot, and this was in a 5-inch pot before, maybe 2 or 3 growths on it, you know, big old leaf span, you know, maybe like 30 centimeters or more. Threw it into a tiny little pot. 2 years later, the thing's jamming again. New roots, new growth. I didn't do anything else other than put the right pot size. And then, of course, you know, you got to know what kind of media you want to use. You know, obviously most of them like big chunky media. You know, that also helps with watering and drainage. You know, I mean, I can't say enough about drainage with orchids too. You know, those roots need to be able to breathe in there. And if they get mucked up and then all that media just gets stale and falls apart, you know, whether it's fir bark or orchiata, it doesn't matter, you know, the pine bark, whatever's, you know, unless it's in straight sphagnum, you really need to have that drainage in the bigger air pockets in there. Is what I found. I mean, what about you with some of your plants you've brought back from the dead?
Yeah, well, it's funny you were, like, as you were talking about it with the roots too, like, that was what I was taught also when I was trying to revive orchids, was rip off the roots. I mean, when I was on the mainland, which is where I started growing orchids, what they'd suggest sometimes is cutting off all the dead roots and then letting it dry out a little bit, but then putting it in a Ziploc bag with like a little bit of like dry or like just barely moist sphagnum, so that it had high humidity, so that even if it couldn't take up water from the roots, it was still doing all right. And you had to be careful because sometimes you could also get like fungal or bacterial things there. But I brought a few back that way. The other thing that I was taught to do, and I saw folks do it when I was in Singapore, but I've never actually seen any good like studies or like, you know, comparisons to see if it works. Have you ever heard of this where like you cut off all the dead roots and then you flip it upside down and hang it with like the pseudo, like with a cattleya, for instance, with the pseudobulbs facing down, and then leave it there for at least a week. I think some folks were saying as long as a month, and then it'll sometimes initiate new roots and you can prod it up at that point. And my understanding is the idea is like has to do with hormones, because there are hormones that depending on where they are in the plant, like if it's tilted a different way, the hormones kind of change their concentrations. And that's how like new shoots or roots can sometimes form. But I imagine that's the idea behind it, but I've never actually like tested it side by side or anything.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's interesting. You know, it's, you know, I'm sure they know something we don't, right? You know, one thing too I've been using to help try to get root growth back is this stuff called mycose, and they make powder form, or it's a you know, mycorrhizae fungi inoculant that you, this white powder, but you can like dip your, it's in it, and you know, it's, people use it for in, you know, making cloning and other stuff in other industries, but it basically super juices the roots, and you put it on dry, and that can also help stimulate root growth that way. And that's another little trick that sometimes I'll use on my special plants, you know, not so much for my commercially grown stuff, but my hobby benches and stuff.
Andrew, that's interesting, because I remember back when The Orchid Thief came out and everyone was really into trying to grow the ghost orchid. That was one of the things that they had said for folks who were having better luck was getting that mycorrhizal inoculant like that. But I hadn't seen anyone using it recently. And the one that, you know, they were suggesting at the time, I think went off the market later. So I'm glad to hear there's one out there that still like does well. Like,
yeah, you know, and they
try it out.
There's different types, you know, the powder one works the best for the orchids because you can just get it all over the plants, you know, essentially coat it. So, you know, that's worked well. And, you know, I'm trying to think other things. I've, you know, out here though, with the humidity built in, it's, you know, you could just leave it on the bench in the rainy season. And, you know, I've had back bulbs, just back bulbs of Stanhopeias that I'm like, oh, this thing's toast. Nope. There's new growth, you know, so we're spoiled, like, what can we say, you know? But, you know, I do appreciate the mainland growers, man, who can do it, like, props, because, you know, we got it pretty easy out here compared to what they got to deal with, you know, winter storms, power outages, backup generators, snowfall, like, oh my God, you know, I follow some of these farms, you know, like Waldorf, and they're in New Jersey, you know, and they're just like, oh, here comes the snow. It's like the greenhouse is covered in 2 feet, is, well, not 2 feet, but you know,
yeah,
like, oh man, I might give up. I don't know if I could.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, yeah, there was this breeder, Jim Rumrill, who did all of these really weird, like, cattleya relative crosses back in like the 70s and 80s. And I reached out to him when I was in my teens and was growing orchids, and he was also in New Jersey. And so I'd asked him, you know, oh, do you still have this? How's that growing? All of that. And he said, now I have like one or two crosses out of like 70, 80, 100, whatever he'd made, because he said there was a snowstorm, something broke, the whole greenhouse, you know, got cooled out and all the orchids froze, and it just like breaks your heart, but can happen so quick over there.
Yeah. Like, and that's not even talking about hurricanes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the opposite end of that, but it's just equally, if not more, devastating. crazy. But yeah, man, so that was pretty good. You know, I did want to say that you know, if you guys have questions and or anything, if you ever have any questions you want to send us, James, what was our email again?
It's theorchidpod@gmail.com. And then we also have Facebook, The Orchid Pod, Instagram, The Orchid Pod, Twitter, The Orchid Pod. Sure, I'm forgetting something else.
Yeah, so The Orchid Pod, that's the key word there.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we can answer any questions we to our best we can. You know, we're not masters, but you know, we do love orchids like everybody else. So be more than happy to, you know, try to answer any questions people might have. You know, hopefully for the next few episodes, we may get some guests in sooner or later. We don't know. You know, we're definitely trying to keep it fresh and, you know, interesting topics. If people have topics they're interested in, they want us to talk about, You know, that's that too. Please reach out to us. You know, we're all about everybody. So, you know,
I had a professor who used to always say, if you're thinking of a question, there's probably other people in the same group who are thinking of the question too, and just, you know, haven't gotten up the courage to raise your hand. So please, you know, err on the side of asking us. And if it's something we've already talked about, we can point you in that direction. But there's a lot of stuff where we're always learning more all the time, you know, so it's good for us to review it too.
Yeah, you know, and I think things to come, we're hoping, we want to talk, we got some complex in bloom. That's winter time here, they're jamming. So that's going to come up probably in the next few episodes. You know, and then some other cool species we have, or, you know, pretty much anything, we're open to whatever. So the wheels never stop turning. So, but yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Like I said, feel free for any questions or anything like that, or feedback is great. And James, you know, like always, it's nice talking to you again.
Likewise, Caleb.
And, you know, keep on growing orchids, people. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. They're really fun, really rewarding hobby.
All right, right on. Well, hey, you guys have a good night. And James, you too. And until next time, keep growing.
Yeah.